Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of mcpmag.com and redmondmag.com, and I thank you for listening. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of December 17th. Microsoft turns up ad serving, Patch Tuesday followed by exploits, Vista SP1 gets a public preview, and Opera accuses Microsoft of anti-competitive practices. Before we head to the first Redmond Radio news segment, let's take a break with this message from our sponsor, Case.
Yeah, IT Detective Agency.
I had to see you. I just can't take it anymore. Having to go out to all the remote locations to patch machines and roll out Vista.
Case is the leading systems management appliance company. Their customers typically install in one day, at one-third the cost of software alternatives. You need to get to KACE.com immediately.
Everything in one appliance. I'm glad you're on the case.
Case. Systems management. Done.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. Whether this is your first time listening, or you've been a fan of this show for some time, or maybe even returning, I do thank you for taking the time out to listen, and I do want your feedback on the show, even if it's just to acknowledge that you're out there. Be sure to send me email to mdomingo@1105media.com. That's mdomingo at 1105media.com. Let's get to the news from Redmond, and there was quite a bit of it last week. First, Microsoft has started placing advertisements on the U.S. version of MSN Mobile, a web portal for cell phone browsers that connects users with Hotmail, instant messaging, search, news, and other content. Microsoft already serves up mobile ads in Japan and some European markets. Competitor Yahoo began selling cell phone ads in the U.S. in late 2006 and expanded overseas in February. Microsoft said the cell phone ad service is a mix of its own efforts and those by two companies it acquired this year, Aquantive and Screen Tonic, which it bought for an undisclosed amount earlier this year. Viacom's Paramount Pictures, Ford Motor Company's Jaguar brand, and Bank of America will be among the first to peddle their brands to U.S. mobile customers. MSN Mobile users will see either small graphics or text ads, depending on the size and quality of their cell phone screens. In related news, Microsoft said it will provide online advertising for CNBC's financial news website. The software maker said it will be the exclusive third-party reseller of contextually driven text ads on the site starting later in December, and display ads beginning in March 2008. The companies did not disclose financial terms of the deal. John Tinter, a general manager at Microsoft, said the company plans to offer advertisers the option to buy ads on CNBC.com together with ads at Microsoft's own financial site, MSN Money. Microsoft last Wednesday acquired a United Kingdom online mapping company to enhance its existing Windows Live-based web services. The software maker did not say what it paid for Multimap, which provides street-level maps, travel directions, and local information. Multimap also offers hotel and restaurant booking services and builds private label mapping tools for companies including Hilton Hotels and Ford Motor Company. Microsoft said Multimap will operate as a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft as part of its search and virtual earth teams. Carolyn M. Gudmundsen, a former Microsoft program manager for MSDN, faced arraignment last week on 18 felony counts of wire fraud and mail fraud in the U.S. District Court of Washington. Gudmundsen, who lives in Kirkland, Washington, is accused of stealing more than $1 million from Microsoft and two of its business partners, Expedia and a California-based domain acquisition service called Marksman, between 2000 and 2004, allegedly using exaggerated expense reports, among other methods. As part of her duties at MSDN, Gudmundsen was responsible for acquiring and renewing numerous domain names for the company as well as for Expedia, charges she put on a personal credit card and then submitted for reimbursement. According to a grand jury indictment released last week, Gudmundsen is accused of taking money in three ways: submitting inflated expense reports using doctored copies of receipts or no receipts, getting reimbursed for Expedia domain names that were already paid for through an agreement with Microsoft and Expedia, and having purchase orders created for a GM Lossman, whose address matches that of Gudmundsen's mother's house in Kirkland, for domain names Microsoft already owned. The government alleges that checks made out to Lossman from Marksman were often delivered directly to Goodmanson and deposited into a personal bank account to which Goodmanson had access. The indictment lists 11 wire transfers totaling around $540,000 between 2000 and 2001 from Microsoft, and 7 checks from Expedia and Marksman totaling slightly more than $250,000 mailed in 2003. A spokesman for the U.S. District Attorney's Office in Seattle said that not everything is in the indictment, and prosecutors on the case will be prepared in court to show that the total losses are more than $1 million. Goodmanson's attorney, C. James French of Seattle-based Cable, Lagenbeisch, Kinnerk and Bauer said in an interview that the idea of more charges not listed on the indictment just seems odd, one of the many issues he has with it. French also said there were also significant discrepancies over the total money involved, what are legitimate expenses, and said that his client had already reimbursed Microsoft $30,000 back in 2004. French would not comment on other aspects of the charges. In release news, it's likely to get a lot easier for people developing with Microsoft's ASP.NET. ASP.NET 3.5 extensions have been released, which will include the highly anticipated MVC option. The preview of the technology was released last week. The ASP.NET 3.5 extensions in its CTP form showcases MVC, support for REST, additional AJAX functionality, and dynamic data controls, according to a blog posting by Microsoft Developer Division General Manager Scott Guthrie. The ASP.NET 3.5 extension CTP follows Visual Studio 2008 and .NET Framework 3.5 released to manufacturing on November 19th. .NET 3.5 integrates ASP.NET AJAX and Link and also adds support for Nest Web Pages and Data View and Data Grid controls. Microsoft released a public beta of Office Live Workspace with cloud-based functions that it said complements its on-premise Office franchise. The beta is available only to pre-registered users. The company line is that Workspace provides an easy way for people to save their Office documents and other files to the web, and then share their work and collaborate with others. Microsoft has posted an array of Office-labeled capabilities as part of its Software Plus Services Live portfolio. Many of those components are responses to cloud-based offerings available from Google, Zoho, and others. A list of the Live offerings is available on the LiveSide website. A year after its initial release, Microsoft announced it's shipping the first service pack for Office 2007. Office System Service Pack 1, originally expected in early 2008, improves stability, performance, and security, according to Office Product Manager Reed Schaffner. The update addresses both client and server products. Microsoft said it has fixed, at a minimum, the 5 top bugs in each Office 2007 application that causes a crash. For example, Excel 2007 will no longer stop responding in some instances when opening a workbook containing calculations, and Outlook 2007 will no longer close unexpectedly when the junk rule is set to null. Dozens of bug fixes are included in the update. For example, a serious display error that occurred when Excel showed calculation results between 65,524 and 65,536 has been fixed. Among the other notable fixes, correcting problems opening large mail files in Outlook 2007, properly enabling Word users to open and edit embedded objects that contain other embedded objects, the ability to open PowerPoint presentations from email attachments in Office Outlook Web Access, and proper display of the modified date function in search results from SharePoint Server 2007. SP1 is available through Microsoft's Download Center. Microsoft last week made a surprise announcement that Hyper-V, codenamed Viridian, is available as a public beta with Windows Server 2008 RC1 Enterprise Edition. Originally, Hyper-V was scheduled to ship with the RTM versions of Windows 2008 in the first quarter of next year. The initial version is restricted to the 64-bit version of Windows 2008 and is currently only available in an English US version. The final version of Hyper-V is expected to ship about 180 days after RTM, Microsoft has consistently stated. A Microsoft press release stated that a number of new features have been added to the beta since the last community technology preview of Hyper-V in September. Those include quick migration, high availability, server core role, and server management integration. It's worth noting that quick migration isn't the same as live migration. Live migration, which is the ability to move virtual machines from one physical machine to another without shutting down a server, eliminating downtime, was one of a number of key features cut out of an earlier version of Viridian to meet the deadline of incorporation into Windows 2008. Still, Hyper-V is expected to make waves in the marketplace. Hyper-V is a hypervisor, a thin layer of software that sits on top of hardware and manages interactions between virtual machines above and the hardware below. It's Microsoft's key product in a suite of virtualization-related offerings, which also include a management program, System Center, Virtual Machine Manager. The first service pack for Windows Vista in its release candidate form was made available last week for public download. RC1 for SP1 was first made available last week, but only those with MSDN or TechNet subscriptions were able to get it. It's now accessible via Windows Update. Installing RC1 for SP1 requires uninstallation of any previous beta versions of SP1. Microsoft is also recommending that you wait at least 1 hour after uninstalling a prior build before installing that RC. The last patch Tuesday of the year that was released last week was a busy one as Microsoft released 7 security bulletins, 3 critical and 4 important. Security experts say that the latest release, which deals with the potential remote code execution and elevation of user privilege holes, cements 2007 as the year of the client-side vulnerabilities and could make 2008 the year of the Vista patch. Security experts identified 8 distinct vulnerabilities this month that all affect Vista. 5 of the 7 patches in the bulletin deal with potential vulnerabilities in the new OS. The 3 critical bulletins all relate to remote code execution. The 3 critical bulletins all relate to remote code execution. The first issue is said to close the book on 2 privately reported vulnerabilities in Microsoft DirectX, a cluster of streaming media application programming interfaces in all versions of Windows. Microsoft said vulnerabilities could allow remote code execution if a user opened a specially crafted streaming media file in DirectX. The second critical item deals with Windows Media Runtime components. This update also resolves a privately reported vulnerability in Windows Media Format. The first 2 patches are timely. Exploit code was released last Saturday that seizes upon a hole in a flawed MP4 codec used on both Windows Media Player and Windows Media Player Classic. The last critical patch constitutes a cumulative update of Internet Explorer. Redmond said the patch covers at least 4 privately reported holes in the application and that the most serious security impact could allow remote code execution if a user viewed a specially crafted web page using IE. What's missing from the cumulative patch is a specific fix for Web Proxy Automatic Discovery Program vulnerabilities, as described in the Software Giant Security Advisory released last week. Observers say Microsoft couldn't resolve that issue in time for the December patch release. In related news, exploits continue to dog Microsoft in applications, as a government agency announced last week that a bug is in the wild that takes advantage of a flaw in Microsoft's Access database. The U.S. Computer Emergency Readiness Team, a subset of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, issued an advisory stating that it has become aware of active exploitation using malicious databases to possibly install malware or other destructive viral programs. A hack of the system through Access database can happen if a database administrator or user opens an MDB file, sent as an attachment through an email message. If designed correctly, security experts say the malicious code can infiltrate the workstation running Access and run nefarious code with an elevated privilege level. Like many exploits, code execution in this case is contingent upon what's called buffer overflow, where a program such as Access would be attempting to store data beyond the boundary of fixed-length buffers configured by database administrators. The surplus data overwrites other memory locations, causing a system crash and heightening the risk related to any vulnerability. Security researchers last month discovered a similar buffer overflow bug in the Microsoft Jet database engine, which is used to analyze and distribute Access files on database tables. And in our last item, a spin-off of Microsoft Research last week released the first beta of new software intended to make it easier to develop and run applications running on multiple mobile operating systems for handheld devices. The software from Zumobi, until last month known as ZenZui, is designed to address some of the key shortcomings of mobile web browsers that they're slow and difficult for most individuals to navigate. At the same time, Zumobi is promising that its software will ultimately support multiple mobile device platforms, allowing developers to build OS-independent mobile apps. Zumobi's offerings could be one of the many that will define a new class of mobile application software, just as the wireless network landscape is showing signs of opening up. As reported last month, Verizon Wireless has said it will open up its network to devices and applications other than those sold and serviced by the carrier. The initial release of Zumobi will work on Microsoft's Windows Mobile version 5 and 6, and Zumobi is preparing a Java-based version that, among other things, will support Research in Motion's BlackBerry platform. And that's it for the news from Redmond. Up next, news from The Wire, right here on Redmond Radio. Thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please pass this show around to your colleagues. Before we get to the newswire, here's an update regarding what's online on the Redmond Media Group websites. Check out the December 2007 issue of Redmond Magazine. How does Steve Ballmer rank among top execs at Microsoft? It's in the list issue of Redmond Magazine at redmondmag.com. And in Redmond Channel Partner, a list of the important executives that you should know in 2008 if you want your partnership to grow as Microsoft grows. And finally, a reminder to listen all the way to the end of the podcast for details on how to enter our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway. A few good items popped up on the AP News feed last week. First up, Borland plans to integrate business intelligence capabilities into its open application lifecycle management solutions in the coming year. Mark Brown, Borland's Vice President of Marketing, explained that BI is a new addition to Borland's product line. The BI capabilities will be added across Borland's open ALM solutions. The names of the new products will be announced early next year, he added. For now, Brown said that all fall under the general nomenclature of Borland's business intelligence offering for ALM. Borland's announcement coincides with its sponsorship of a study conducted by Forrester Consulting that examined the effectiveness of metrics in application development projects. The free study, Changing the Cost-Benefit Equation for Application Development Metrics, was made available to registered users of Borland's website. One reason to focus on metrics is that application development organizations are feeling the heat to become more agile. Better metrics are needed to make that happen, according to Brown. The study surveyed 20 application development and project management organizations with revenues ranging from $1 to $5 billion. The aim of the study was to investigate the question of metrics in software development. It found big problems with how well the software development process is tracked and measured. For instance, most application development metrics were collected manually by project managers or lead developers, according to the survey. In some cases, respondents indicated that manual collection of this information took up as much as a third of the manager's time. Superficial metrics often lead organizations astray, according to the report. An example of such poor measurements is the use of on-time, under-budget, and on-scope metrics, which are typically collected at the end stage of a project. The report described these metrics as unsuitable for application development, even though they are commonly used by application development professionals. The ability to actually use the collected data was also considered to be problematic. 8 of 20 respondents were unable to trend or aggregate the metrics. Forrester Consulting cited inconsistent collection methods and the use of multiple tools and repositories as potential stumbling blocks in this area. The report suggested two approaches as a way out of the metrics mess. First, application development teams should use iterative incremental development processes in which metrics are collected in intervals throughout the project. Second, application development teams need to practice a disciplined estimation of business value in their project estimates. For more, check out the Forrester Consulting report on metrics available on the Borland website. LinkedIn, the Business Central social networking site, last week talked more about opening up its platform to select partners. Right now, the specific deliverables are an API available to partners that meet LinkedIn criteria. That API has been available for these partners for some time but was announced last week. The API will not, however, be downloadable to the masses. Interested parties must email the company to discuss potential uses, said Lucian Beebe, Director of Product Management. The company calls this a REST-based API, relying on standard generic XML transfers, and should be broadly applicable, he added. Beebe used inaugural Partner Business Week to show how the API can integrate the social network into other applications. What happens there is that Business Week Online is cross-referenced with the reader's LinkedIn social network. The company will announce other partners using the API soon. That API is one phase of LinkedIn's outreach. The other is the ability to build professional applications to run inside LinkedIn itself. Toward that end, LinkedIn has joined the open social effort spearheaded by Google. Competing against Facebook and MySpace, LinkedIn is growing from a much smaller base. In October, it had 4.9 million unique visitors compared to 19.5 million for Facebook and 58.8 million for MySpace. A House Republican last week sent a letter to Google asking the Internet search company to provide more information about its search practices and targeted advertising. Representative Joe Barton, the top Republican in the House Energy and Commerce Committee, said in the letter that he was concerned about the privacy and consumer protection implications stemming from Google's proposed $3.1 billion acquisition of DoubleClick. He sent a list of 24 detailed questions to Google regarding its data retention and privacy policies and how it uses such information. If the acquisition is approved, Barton wants the same questions answered for DoubleClick. In the letter, Barton chided Google for initially inviting committee staff to learn firsthand its practices and technology, but then rebuffing requested meetings later. Google spokesman Adam Kovacevic said the company was surprised by the letter. Company executives were willing to meet with Barton's staff in California, he said, but were out of town on the proposed dates, which were right after Thanksgiving. Kovacevic said the company has tried to reschedule and will answer the congressman's questions. In early November, 12 Republican House members urged Representative Bobby Rush, chairman of a House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee, to hold a hearing on the DoubleClick acquisition's impact on consumer privacy. Rush never held the hearing. A Senate committee held a hearing in late September on the proposed transaction, at which several senators expressed concern but not outright opposition to the deal. Google has said it expects regulators to approve the deal before the end of the year. Browser maker Opera Software has cried foul, charging Microsoft with antitrust behavior in a complaint to the European Commission. The antitrust suit filed last week charges that Microsoft's bundling of the Internet Explorer browser with its dominant Windows operating system hurts competition. Opera wants the EC to force the unbundling of the browser and/or the exclusion of alternate browsers to be pre-installed on the Windows desktop, thereby leveling the playing field. That argument echoes earlier charges that Microsoft bundled functionality with its operating system rivals providing similar features. Real Networks alleged the same thing over Microsoft's inclusion of a media player in Windows. Opera is also asking the European Commission to force Microsoft to comply with basic web standards as accepted by web authoring communities. Opera alleges that Microsoft gives lip service to supporting common standards, but instead subverts them, and that this practice makes Microsoft the controller of de facto standards, which are more costly to support, harder to maintain, and technologically inferior, and that can even expose users to security risks. IE retains the lion's share of the worldwide market with nearly 85% share as of July, according to researcher OneStat. Mozilla and Firefox remain firmly in second place with almost 13%, while Apple's Safari comes in third with less than 2%. Opera had less than 1% at the time. And finally, the Dutch government has set a soft deadline of April 2008 for its agencies to start using open-source software, according to the Netherlands Economic Affairs Ministry. Government organizations will still be able to use proprietary software and formats, but will have to justify it under the new policy, Ministry spokesman Edwin van Schoenberg said. Van Schoenberg said the plan was approved unanimously at a meeting of two parliamentary commissions last Wednesday. Many governments worldwide have begun testing open-source software to cut costs and eliminate dependency on the individual companies, such as Microsoft. The government estimates it would save $8.8 million a year on city housing registers alone after switching to open-source. Microsoft has raced to achieve open-source certification for its OpenOffice XML standard, but has so far failed to receive endorsement from the International Standards Organization, which is the certifying authority recognized by the Dutch government. Microsoft Netherlands spokesman Hans Bos noted that its Word documents were still allowed as equal alternatives for the moment, and said he expects the company to receive approval soon for its OpenOffice XML to qualify as open source. But he said the company was worried about and opposed other aspects of the Dutch policy, especially the provision that agencies should prefer open source. The Dutch policy directs government organizations at the national level to be ready to use the open document format to save documents by April, and at the state and local level by 2009. And that's this week's episode of Redmond Radio. Before we go, I'd like to remind faithful Redmond Radio listeners that you can win a Redmond t-shirt in my weekly t-shirt giveaway. To enter, just send me an email at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com with Redmond t-shirt on the subject line of your message. This week's t-shirt winner is Scott C. from New Jersey. Thanks for listening to the show, Scott, and congratulations to him for winning the shirt. And good luck to the rest of you next week. That's it for this episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to once again offer my thanks to Case for sponsoring this episode. And you can find out more about them and their K-Box security appliances at kace.com. As well, I want to thank listeners for their continued support of Redmond Radio throughout your continued streaming and downloading of this program. See you here next week.